ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors of the ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. The ETF Store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate and Jason will help you get up to date on what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
Welcome to ETF Prime. Nate Geraci and Jason Lank in studio. As always, thank you so much for joining us. We have a very important topic to cover on today's show. Obviously, we talk a lot about ETFs on this program and things like minimizing investment costs, building diversified portfolios, tax efficiency. We talk about the importance of saving, controlling your own investor behavior. And no question, all of these are critical to investing success and really just financial success overall. But here's a question I'll pose to you. What if you do everything right? You save money. You put it in the right investments. You mind your own behavior. You do all of the things you're supposed to in order to build a successful retirement. But then once you reach retirement, there's this risk out there. It's a risk that's probably not even on your radar right now. We're going to cover something today that doesn't get a whole lot of run, which is what happens as investors age and cognitive abilities begin to decline. Think about how that can impact financial decision making. And before you think this isn't applicable to you, consider that according to the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, 2/3 of individuals older than 60 who have no dementia will experience some cognitive decline over a 4-year period. So whether you're someone who is entering their golden years, or if you have parents or other people you care for who are reaching their golden years, this is a conversation you're going to want to hear. And we have simply a tremendous guest today, Bree Williams, who is head of practice management for the global spider business. Of course, State Street Spiders, that's the third largest ETF provider. Bree is an expert around this particular topic of aging and financial decision making. Jason, this can be a difficult topic to talk about, right? People don't want to think about their own deterioration, so to speak. It's like talking about death with life insurance. This obviously isn't a fun topic, but it's an extremely important one.
Very, very important. And I suppose a few may consider it off the beaten path for our show, but I don't think it's that far. I think it has a big impact. In fact, I am 100% certain that every single person listening has been impacted or touched in some way or another, a loved one, a parent, a grandparent, a spouse, by aging and all the ramifications of that. The challenge is that in our younger years, for the most part, we know what we know, and we know what we don't know, for the most part. We make some mistakes, but you're in your game. In our later years, that can change. You know, what you think you know and what you think you don't know becomes a little less clear. It is a critical time of life because you're right. If you have made a series of good financial decisions and just life decisions over your lifetime, a few poor decisions at the end can really undo a lot of good things.
All right. Now, later in the program, we will have our usual weekly segment with ETF.com. We'll be joined by Drew Voris, ETF.com's editor-in-chief. We're going to wade into thematic ETFs. So think about ETFs investing in themes like blockchain, artificial intelligence, marijuana. These tend to be narrower segments of the market. So we're going to visit with Drew about how to best evaluate thematic ETFs and some other considerations before using them in a portfolio. Drew will join us in the back half of the program. As always, if you have questions or comments, you can find me on Twitter @NateGeraci, or you can visit ETFprime.com. So before Bree Williams joins us, Jason, let you and I set the table a bit on this topic of aging and financial decision making. And I want to provide another truly eye-opening stat. This really caught my attention. So I mentioned at the top of the program that 2/3 of individuals older than 60 who have no dementia will experience some cognitive decline over a 4-year period. Well, listen to this from State Street. Financial decision making peaks for most people in their early to mid 50s. Investing skills can be begin declining sharply in your 60s and 70s. Now, look, that doesn't mean you're not sharp enough to operate at a very high level and continue making sound financial decisions. But what it does mean is you need to be cognizant of the fact that this can and does occur. And here's the thing. When you think about the demographics of our country, State Street shows there are currently 49 million people age 65 and older, representing about 15% of our population. Within 10 years, that number is expected to grow to 66 million. And of course, people are living longer. This demographic controls a lot of wealth. By some estimates, baby boomers control $30 trillion in wealth. So, Jason, I guess my point is you start adding all of this together and you can see the potential problem.
It is a big issue. I want to remind everyone that we're talking about averages here. So before everyone gets upset that, you know, 50 is the peak, it is just the average. Some people, many people, operate at a peak level into their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and, you know, to the very end. You know, on the other hand, some people never get to operate at a peak level. So there's everything in between. So that's the average. And obviously, the shades of gray in here. It's not black and white. But I see this. You know, I've been in the business over 25 years. And so I'm 25 years older. My clients are 25 years older. And over that length of time, helping people to and through retirement, I've been in some situations where I had to lean a little over the line to prevent people from making some poor decisions, maybe getting other family members involved to make sure that, you know, a lifetime of good work doesn't evaporate because of a few poor decisions later on. This is real life. You know, as they say, Father Time bats 1,000. It catches up with all of us. You know, you can foul off a lot of foul balls and stay at the plate a long time, but, you know, at some point, he's going to get you out.
Well, let's talk more about some of the problems a decline in cognitive abilities can present. And I think at just the basic level, poor investment decision-making, right? And I would tell you, look, my grandfather, he's approaching 90. And I love my grandfather, but I've got to tell you, he'll sit there and day trade oil stocks in single country emerging market ETFs. And I've tried to reason with him. I've told him probably not a great idea, but he doesn't want to hear it. And he's in good health, but I think clearly there's been some cognitive decline. He's still sharp. I just don't think he's in a position to truly be evaluating these things. But I think there's an element of day trading or investing that makes him feel alive, right? It just makes him feel good. My grandmother passed away a few years back. He has a lot of time on his hands. He's always loved investing. I just think it's something he doesn't want to give up, but he's taking on some real risk.
That is not an uncommon story, whether it's day trading oil stocks or something else. That's clearly not about making money. He's not making a financial decision to tactically trade stocks to increase his net worth. If it happens, he stumbles into it, I'm sure he's happy, but that's not why he's doing it. You're right. He's making another kind of decision, did you say, to feel alive. Maybe he's bored. Maybe there's a lot of other things. He's just using trading to scratch the itch, whatever that itch is.
No, I think that's right.
It happens to be there. Here's another example. You know, there are proliferation of casinos around this country. Everybody, there's within 10 miles of one. Go to a casino on a Wednesday morning around 11 a.m. and go to the penny slot room or the dime or the nickel and take a look around at what's going on. You notice, I guarantee you know what you'll see.
Good example.
And, you know, folks aren't there to get rich. Casinos don't get built because people win too much money. You know, they're there for other reasons. Just about whatever it is you use to scratch the itch later on in life, whatever you do in moderation is probably okay. But the bigger the dollar signs get, and I think that's what we're talking about with cognitive decline and later on in life, it can be a slippery slope when you combine you know, desire for action or community or whatever itch you have, along with a lot of time, along with some money, and along with declining cognitive ability, that can develop into a witch's brew. You know, what makes your story interesting, Nate, is that you're in the business.
Right.
Right. It's our job to help counsel people. And if it's that hard for a family member, imagine what everyone listening has to go through. It's just, it's very, very difficult.
No, it is frustrating. And that's the challenge. And we'll talk more about how to deal with these challenges with Bree Williams here in a moment. And look, that's just one example of, you know, perhaps poor decision making as people age. But even moving beyond investing decisions, which is probably the obvious one here, think about some of the other ways cognitive decline can impact financial decision making. You might have brokers or advisors selling investments that are unnecessary, expensive, hard to understand. I think that's clearly a risk. There are outright investment scams out there, pyramid schemes, ridiculous private offerings, those sorts of things. Unfortunately, I've actually read what I'm going to call criminals literally combing obituaries to find people who have recently lost loved ones, with the idea being to find someone who may be alone, they're feeling isolated, emotionally not in a great place, and they'll try to target and take advantage of those people. Think about that. And then I think even moving beyond sort of the investment realm, think about scams around things like home repairs, right, where you have these outrageous bids made for projects or just shoddy work being done, or even just think about overly aggressive charities. I've seen the mail my grandfather receives. I've got to tell you, I think it's important to give back, certainly, but it is shocking how many donation requests he receives and honestly how some of these are couched. To me, it really borders on predatory.
It's more than predatory. To your point about the solicitations, you know, I've been touched many ways by aging in professionally and personally. We had to take the checkbook away from an aging family member in my family who just couldn't say no to any clause or anyone. To your point about these solicitations are phenomenal. I mean, they tug at your heartstrings, especially if you're a little older, a little lonely, you're looking for a community. You know, my family member had an incredibly generous heart and was financially stable, but not overly stable. And so by writing these checks and responding to these donations, it became a problem. There aren't any words to describe that meeting we had when we told her what had to be done. The resentment, the anger, the desperation of losing control. We knew it was the right thing to do, but I would not wish that meeting on my worst enemy. It's that difficult, and it's emotionally draining. So if you haven't experienced that sort of meeting over time, you probably will, or something close to it, because that later on in life, that can happen.
Well, I want to give one more stat here from State Street. They said in the U.S., financial fraud among the elderly is estimated at $3 billion annually. And they said it's likely that number is understated just because fraud isn't always reported. And of course, that also doesn't include just poor financial decision making, right? We're talking here about outright fraud. Look, we need to take a break. We have Bree Williams on the line with us. But the way I would frame why this is such an important topic is like this. If you think about investing in financial planning, really a lot of it comes down to just managing uncertainty, managing risk. And the fact is, cognitive decline is a risk. It's a real risk for everyone. It's a risk for me, Jason. It's a risk for you, everyone, as you get older. And if you don't have a plan in place to mitigate this risk, you're opening yourself up to what I was saying at the top of the show, that you can do everything right in investing, right? You make all the right moves, and you have it all go down the drain in retirement. You know, everyone hopes they won't be the one impacted by cognitive decline or other issues. But Jason, as the saying goes, hope isn't a strategy. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll dive much deeper into this topic. We'll be joined by Bree Williams, head of practice management for the global spider business. You're listening to ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime, Nate Geraci and Jason Lankin studio. Before break, we were discussing the impact aging can have on financial decision making and some of the potential risks that can present. We are now very pleased to be joined by Bree Williams, head of practice management for the global spider business. Bree has over 20 years of experience with the retail investing market and consumer behavior. She spent a lot of time focusing on this particular topic of the aging brain and how it can impact investors and overall financial well-being. Bree is joining us via phone today from Boston. Bree, a pleasure having you on the program.
Thrilled to be here. Thanks for including me.
Bree, first, why do you think this topic of the aging brain and financial decision-making seems to fly under the radar? I mean, if you just look at the data, it seems more likely than not that everyone will at least have to consider the possibility of cognitive decline. Why isn't this topic more front of mind for investors?
Well, you're correct. Cognitive ability and longevity go hand in hand. And it's true. Many people will be able to handle their finances with ease well into their later years. But we need to remember that even individuals with healthy brains tend to experience changes. Think about it just as your brain slowing down. And that does impact one's cognitive abilities. So it's important for us to be aware of how our brain ages so we can live long and well on the journey of life. And as we think about just our population in the U.S., as we continue to see where the majority of individuals are on the aging spectrum, we can see that cognitive decline is set to become one of the most challenging intergenerational issues facing not only families, but the investment industry that is seeking to serve them.
Bree, my sense is many people tend to perceive cognitive decline as being associated with some sort of a disease, perhaps Alzheimer's, and so they think it's not relevant to them. But of course, the fact is, and you just touched on this, cognitive decline is typically part of the normal aging process. I know you're not a physician, so we don't need to get into the weeds here, but can you maybe describe the spectrum of cognitive decline?
Absolutely, and I feel for everyone to move forward productively. Education is important, and in this case, knowledge is especially empowering. So taking the time to understand what is cognitive decline and who could be affected is a great place to start. So you're right, mild cognitive decline, dementia, and Alzheimer's disease are all related, but they're distinctly different types of cognitive decline. So thinking about them as a spectrum of conditions, which of course all are diagnosed symptomatically, let me just give you a high-level overview of what those three conditions are about. So mild cognitive impairment can describe the minor lapses in one's short-term memory. For example, misplacing an object or forgetting a word. And what happens then is that can then impact one's ability over a period of time to process information. This occurs in roughly 15 to 20% of people in the U.S. who are 65 and older. Dementia, if we think about that on the middle of the spectrum, if we're thinking about a long-term range, that's likely to present itself when an individual's cognitive decline actually begins to interfere with their daily life. Symptoms here are more significant and can include confusion and disorientation. There are different types of dementia, and there are various underlying causes, and those symptoms will vary according to these causes. On the extreme end of the spectrum is Alzheimer's disease, which most of us are familiar with, and this one is probably the most progressive and debilitating form of cognitive decline, and it's certainly the most common type of dementia. Alzheimer's causes problems with memory, thinking, as well as behavior. And the symptoms typically develop more slowly and get worse over time, becoming severe enough to interfere, of course, with daily tasks. Alzheimer's disease accounts for 60 to 80% of dementia cases today.
Okay, so Jason and I discussed some of the potential issues cognitive decline can present. I think everything from simply making poor investment decisions to being the victim of outright fraud. I want to focus more on the solutions with you.
Sure.
So how do investors begin to plan and prepare for cognitive decline? How can they protect themselves?
Preparing is key. And if you think about this as just another risk-managed approach to how you protect yourself, your loved ones, and, of course, your financial assets, then we can move past the psychological barriers that tend to become hurdles when dealing with this particular topic. And if we look just across the research that we have embarked on and what we see, not only in the medical field, but other secondary resources covering this topic, this psychological resistance is very real, and it does impede the planning process. But focusing on solutions, first step is to start early on and before any possibility of cognitive decline may present itself. What you want to think about this is like insurance. Let's put a plan together proactively, and if we never need it, no problem. But if I have a plan in place while we are most able to put one together, ultimately that's going to give the individual peace of mind, and it's also going to carry that same peace of mind in terms of roles, responsibilities, honoring loved ones' wishes, because roles and responsibilities within family as well as other trusted members, including anyone you're working with in financial services and legal entities as well as the medical community, there's clarity on what's this roadmap about. So it's a lot to think about, but if you break it down into digestible bites of how to proceed, you first and foremost want to consider what are the standard documents A may need, such as a durable power of attorney, as well as some more specific practice documents that might lie with your legal and or financial partners, such as a diminished capacity letter. What's most important as you embark on considering your options and resources here is to become aware of what are the resources available to you, the investment and legal professionals you're working with, because all parties have responsibility in this prep work.
Bree, I want to go back. You mentioned hurdles. What do you find as some of the hurdles that prevent people from developing a plan and really preparing for the normal aging process?
There are several. And if we think about, you know, ourselves as an example, we've heard among our own family members, that won't happen to me. We also hear, oh, I'll address that when I see the first signs of cognitive decline. And that stems back to our ability to want to be in control. We leave productive and independent lives today, so we don't want to give up our independence or even accept help. That can be especially difficult. And those are often some of the most significant hurdles to even getting started on putting a plan together or reaching out for resources and advice. You know, so in addition to the fear of loss of independence, if we think about what this topic really means, it starts to put us in the phase of, well, this is the back portion of my life, so I'm anxious about mortality. I don't want to think about this. There's also an aversion that we have to complexity. As I mentioned, this is a lot to consider and on a sensitive topic, to say the least. So many of us are overwhelmed with, I don't even know where to start. So if we think about how we can overcome some of these hurdles, education, getting informed on the resources, starting early to put a plan together while we're most able can help us counteract what is our natural responses to procrastinating here.
Bree, obviously one of the potential issues of somebody experiencing cognitive decline is the potential to be taken advantage of, just outright fraud or somebody getting into personal finances and maybe not doing the things they're supposed to. And I've seen some studies showing it's actually often family members or caretakers who take advantage of people with cognitive decline. I'm curious, have you seen any data on that? And if so, what's the solution there?
Absolutely. Fraud and abuse of one's finances for our seniors is a critical issue, and we feel very strongly about that. Statistically, the National Center on Elder Abuse reports that 90% of the perpetrators, unfortunately, are family members or people the victim knows well, and that can be neighbors, friends, or even caregivers, which is unfortunate. So fraudsters aren't the strangers in the world, typically. There are people that are in our lives today in one way or another. And when we think about how significant is this issue for the U.S., 84% of the experts that specialize in investment fraud and financial exploitation of American senior citizens are only seeing that this problem's getting worse. So unfortunately, as we get older, we can find ourselves more alone. So that can make us more susceptible to being open to developing a relationship if we don't know the individual or inviting them into our lives on a more intimate level. So isolation can be a real red flag So it's important that if there are no relatives nearby or friends that can check in regularly, if family's halfway across the country, to maintain an active relationship, at least by phone, and if someone can be local that they know, so we can catch any signs of change. Someone who's been previously engaged and very sharp, if they have starting to have some shortfalls in immediate recall on what matters and what's important, you know, we want to be able to step in and help and then make sure that they're up to speed on where their health is, calling that primary care physician for a good checkup, make sure everything's okay, and it's just a honest misplacement of where those keys were today as opposed to something being a signal for it being more serious.
Bree, this is Jason Lank. Earlier you mentioned that one of the keys to starting the planning process is to start early. In my practice, I see people putting the decision to make plans off. You know, I'll do that when I retire. Mm-hmm. Is there a number? Is there an age? Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 60? I know everybody's in a different place, but how important is it to start the process well before any cognitive decline appears?
I would honestly suggest that we consider including a what-if plan as part of our retirement plan. And you know, we all start planning for retirement much earlier than age 40. If that's too early for folks, then I think once you get your midpoint of your life and your finances start to become more complex and you get more serious about what do I have and what do I need to spend when it comes to the retirement phase of my life, we should definitely be having these planning conversations in our mid-40s, but definitely by the time we're in our early 50s. It's never too soon, but unfortunately it could become too late.
Bree, can you talk more about the potential implications if there is no plan, if people are not prepared for cognitive decline? What are some of the issues that can present?
So unfortunately, this can leave us wide open to several very real threats, making us vulnerable to family conflicts, expensive legal action, and of course the devastating financial fraud and abuse we were talking about. And if we start to think about what's important to me when I consider my purpose for investing, and I think about the retirement portion of my life, having that control, having that peace of mind, not being a burden onto our loved ones, those are things that we want to be able to have successfully checked off. So for us to just take some steps to put together a proactive plan that gives us accountability, provides us with protection, and it's in place with the instruction as well as the funding and structures we need, then if I never need it, not a problem. But if I do need it, I'm well on my way to having the control that I wanted, even if I no longer am 100% cognitively aware.
Well, Bree, I think very well said. We'll have to leave it there. Really appreciate your time today. I think certainly an extremely important topic. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you for including us.
That was Bree Williams, head of practice management for the global spider business. Jason, pretty clear the importance of this topic. You know, we could probably do several shows on this. I mentioned earlier, I don't think this gets near enough attention, because if you think about this, and you pointed this out, this is relevant to everyone in some way, shape, or form. I thought Bree did a nice job of sort of covering the key points there.
Two ahas for me is when to start the planning process. You know, this isn't something you think about when you start collecting Social Security. This is something you think about 10, 20, or 30 years before that to have this plan in place. The second thing that I find, my own fault, and I know what people listening probably agree, when I think cognitive impairment, my mind immediately shifts to, you know, someone who's, you know, incapacitated.
Right, yeah.
You know, it just doesn't know where they're at, you know, that end stage of Alzheimer's. But that's really not it. There are shades of gray. And the term she used was normal. You know, this isn't a life-threatening disease that a few hundred people out of a million get. We're all aging. And to some extent, all of us at some point will slow down, I guess is the term. And that's not necessarily an illness early on. It's called we're aging. And so don't know, it takes some of the sting out of it, at least for me anyway.
Going back to your first point on sort of this need to be proactive, you know, think about this. If you wait too long, and let's say, unfortunately, you or a loved one does develop Alzheimer's, think about how much more difficult it is to plan at that point in time. If you're trying to get powers of attorney in place and have, you know, beneficiaries added to accounts and just get a plan in place, well, obviously it's much more difficult in that situation. And, you know, if you just think about it from a personal standpoint, I mentioned again at the top of the show that for me, what's really eye-opening is, you know, we sit here every week on the show and we talk about, you know, how wonderful ETFs are, right? They're low cost. You can build these diversified portfolios. They're tax efficient, so on and so forth. And we talk about investor behavior and all these important things to be successful from an investment standpoint. And as I mentioned, you can do all of those things right. And if you don't address this particular risk, it doesn't matter. And you could end up in a situation where, you know, look, you could be having financial decisions made for you that you don't agree with or disagree with. You know, you start adding all this up, you can see the broader implications here.
Imagine the consequences of starting too late when you're already impaired or slightly impaired or a spouse. And could those plans then be contested later on by someone? You know, could they be invalidated because they were made without, you know, true understanding of what that was? You know, we all see the things later in life, you know, look at the Hollywood situation of Anna Nicole Smith, you know, marrying the 90-year-old billionaire. You know, that's obviously from the headlines, but was there a plan in place for that? I don't know. But you're right. This topic doesn't get enough run, and not enough people are thinking about it. People in their 40s and 50s, not just 60s and 70s. So, you know, I'm glad we're spending the time on it.
That's my hope. My hope is everyone at least took something away from this conversation. I do know it's a little bit outside the box from what we normally cover. But again, I just think extremely important. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to completely switch gears. We'll be joined by ETF.com's Drew Voris. We'll talk thematic ETFs. So think ETFs investing around themes like robotics and blockchain and infrastructure. We'll look into exactly what thematic ETFs are, how you can best evaluate them, and some considerations before using in a portfolio. We'll do that right after the break. This is ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime. Nate and Jason in studio. Let's talk thematic ETFs with ETF.com's Drew Voris.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Drew, I've got to tell you, anytime we talk thematic ETFs on the show, I always think back to Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas, who said 95% of media attention is focused on ETFs that should represent 5% of your portfolio. I think that's definitely the case with thematic ETFs when you talk about things like blockchain and robotics and marijuana. But these things are just too much darn fun to talk about, aren't they?
But, you know, they have pulled in billions and billions of dollars in investor money. And I think anything new is a little bit strange. And the way we look at these things, these are really products that are looking at niche markets in sort of a microcosm of the way ETFs work. So you're not necessarily investing in one company. You're investing in a bunch of companies. And as you alluded to, some of the headlines that people may be familiar with are yes, there's a marijuana ETF that is comprised of public companies that have related businesses into the marijuana industry, everything from growing it to developing medicines. So it's a broad range. And the other way to look at it is we all know about sectors, right? There's healthcare, retail, tech. These are really subsectors of industries. And it is really a big umbrella, in my opinion. It can involve everything from a sort of a religious-based ETF to, like you alluded to, blockchain or marijuana. So what it is just basically taking a group of companies that are all focused in one particular area of business and allowing people to invest in those. And I would argue, too, it might be a little bit safer because, you know, we come at ETF.com from the passive investment genes, if you will. It's probably better to invest in a handful of companies and one in particular. But however, I will throw one other thing out there. We covered this whole topic in ETF report coming up in September, which is free to anybody out there that wants to either look at it online, and if you're a financial professional, we'll mail it to you. But one of the things that we highlighted is anytime you start concentrating on any particular area of the market, volatility is a risk. So these areas, sure, blockchain gets the headlines, but think about Bitcoin, right? Less than a year ago, Bitcoin was at $20,000. Now it's at $6,000. So these things, just like Bitcoin, not that there's a Bitcoin ETF yet, but these things become very volatile. But I also think, too, one thing, Nate, we get focused on too much of the shiny new toys, like the marijuana or, you know, at one point there was a whiskey ETF. But what we break it down to is a little bit more traditional. The themes can be infrastructure, for instance, which was a big theme right around the election and continues to be. The potential investment in that area, and natural resource ETFs. It doesn't kind of think of a theme, but when you're talking about investing in natural resources like timber, like different kinds of commodities, that's sort of a broad range theme. And of course, as you alluded to too, there's the disruptive technology kind of thoughts, where you have the robotic ETF, Robo, Bots, BOTZ is another robotic ETF. Those are some of the biggest thematic ETFs, if you will, and probably the most familiar may be HAC, which back is a cybersecurity ETF that was launched, if you recall, during the Sony hack from allegedly North Korea during that whole incident. But the theme caught up with the headlines. It attracted $1 billion very quickly, still has that much. So sometimes it's about a theme catching the headlines, sort of like catching a wave if you're surfing.
So, Drew, you mentioned thematic ETFs. It's a big umbrella. I completely agree. There's obviously been a lot of proliferation in this space. As investors evaluate thematic ETFs, say in infrastructure or robotics, what do you think are some of the most important considerations there?
We interviewed Roger Nussbaum, who's pretty well known in the ETF industry. I think you know him too, Nate. he compares it a lot, and I think this is a really good analogy. It's sort of like investing in an individual stock. You're not going to put all your eggs into one individual stock. So in terms of that, as you mentioned, yes, maybe 5% of your portfolio should be invested in robotics or a particular theme. And if you want to play on something, if you will. But I think that's one way to look at it. That these are sort of analogous to an individual stock, as opposed to, you know, when you invest in technology, XLK, for instance, the State Street Technology Sector Fund. That's a really big fund covering a lot of big companies. So I think that's something to keep in mind. You're really slicing and dicing the market thinner and thinner. And when you get thinner and thinner, the concentration is there and the potential volatility is there as well. I mean, blockchain gets hacked tomorrow. Blockchain ETFs, we all going to see it's going to go down. I mean, so there's that kind of emotional response to some of these thematic ETFs as well.
Well, I think also just making sure you're getting a pure play to whatever investment theme you want. If you look at some of these thematic ETFs, because the overall universe may be a bit smaller, sometimes you'll find they'll round out the portfolio with really indirect plays on a space. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. For instance, we've had a couple. Electric vehicle ETFs. But once you go down and you start looking at them, the related businesses are some companies like GM, right? So you're starting to buy an auto fund, really, because almost every auto company has some kind of related business now, trying to go toward autonomous and electrical vehicles. The same thing you'll see in some of these niche tech ETFs. You're going to see IBM and iPay, right? So you're starting to get some of the broad sector taste in some of these ETFs. And that's a very good point, Nate, it may be concentrated, but then when you look at some of the players or some of the exposure in the ETF, you're going to find that it's a lot of big traditional companies. So you're not necessarily always playing a niche market. That means you're playing a lot of disruptive companies. Sometimes they're very traditional.
Well, and that's where I think something like active share as a metric can be important. Just making sure whatever your thematic ETF is, that it's doing something different than you know, the broader market if you're going to round out your portfolio.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, I'll just got one note here on robo and bots. Okay, these are the two robotic ETFs, Global X Robotics and Artificial Intelligence ETF, BOTZ, has something like $2.2 billion in it. Right behind it is Robo, the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF. There's a big difference between those two. One is international, one's domestic. Robo is domestic, bots is international. So that's the other thing you have to start thinking about, too. So is it small cap? Is it large cap? Is it traditional? Is it domestic? Where are they generating the revenue? So it gets a little bit more complicated than it may seem. And that can be a risk for any investor that kind of gets lured into this. Like I said, I always call it the bright new shiny toy that everybody wants to see and play with. And it's bringing in funds and it's going up. But we know that that's not going to be the way it's always going to be.
Drew, this is Jason Lank. There are a lot of very, I would call, obscure thematic ETFs. I'm curious how these come to market, the process. From a demand standpoint, you know, I don't know that there were hundreds of thousands of investors rioting because they couldn't buy a timber ETF. So, right. You know, so on the other hand, I guess it's the ETF issuer. Is it more of a field of dreams type of attitude? If I build it, they will come. How do these things come out of the woods?
Well, there is that throw the spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. What I think has happened with a lot of the smaller, you know, something like GUNR, which is a very big natural resource fund from First Trust, I think. FlexShares. I mean, that's a very broad fund. That's just broadening out the commodity space in some areas that traditionally commodity funds don't have. Like I said, like timber and other things that make a lot of sense. But that's a big macro kind of story. I'll go back to we actually had a whiskey ETF that was WSKY, closed this year, but it was focused on companies that were distillers, et cetera, et cetera. They come to market a little cheaper using white label ETF issuers. So, for instance, you can rent what we call exemptive relief. So you go to a company that will help you launch an ETF that already has the regulatory approval to launch ETFs. So you're sort of renting their space, and we've seen some of those. In fact, HACC, the cybersecurity, came from that same incubator, if you will. So there are very successful stories, but as we can all see, there are sometimes you're getting a little bit ridiculous, if you will, with some of these themes, and they don't catch on. However, you never know. And again, like I said, we have a marijuana ETF is out there with $300 million. So some people believe in that kind of stuff, and that's enough money to make a fund work.
Drew, we have just a few minutes left here. Sort of a follow-up to what Jason was asking. What do you think the recipe for success is for a thematic ETF?
Well, I think it's with any kind of ETF, and we've just seen this. We've been covering it on ETF.com with JP Morgan launching these beta builder products that are very simple, plain vanilla products focusing on Japan, Canada, Europe, and they're suddenly bringing in $1 billion. Well, as Jason mentioned, they're not just building the field of dreams and hope people come. They have clients that are already interested in these products that are committed to buying into them, maybe switching over from a similar product, and now it's cheaper. So I think market research is something ETF issuers really need to study. And if you don't have the market in front of you, you better bring the clients. And again, as Erica Bloomberg alludes to, it's called bring your own assets.
Drew, about 2 minutes left.
They're not coming and launch. Sure.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do you think thematic ETFs is where we'll continue to see the most innovation in the ETF space? Just because all of the plain vanilla ETFs are spoken for?
Right. So I do. I think there's a lot of interest in that, and I think younger investors relate more to a lot of these thematic ETFs because they're working in that business. They relate to it. They relate to digital purchases, and there's ETFs that are surrounded by that. But on the other hand, I think there has to be a little bit of a note of caution, and I think the theme is that this is sort of like investing in individual stocks as opposed to investing in plain vanilla market coverage.
Drew, you mentioned the ETF report on thematic ETFs. Is that available at ETF.com?
It will be on September 1st. And again, if you go to ETF.com, you can go to the ETF report section. And if you're a professional, we'll be happy to mail a copy forever.
Well, Drew, as always, a great chatting. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Jason.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voris. One other thing that I'll add, Jason, that I don't think we touched on, you know, like this is an exciting segment of the ETF market when you talk about thematic ETFs. I think that, you know, as I led off with Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas, that, you know, that 95% of media attention is focused on ETFs that should represent 5% of your portfolio. I do think you need to pick a theme or two, and that's it, if you're going to add these to a portfolio. Because, you know, think about this. If you start mixing together a bunch of different themes, don't you kind of end up with a market at some point, right? If your entire portfolio is thematic ETFs, you're probably going to end up with something that resembles a market, but you're paying higher fees. I just think you need to think about how to use these in the context of a portfolio. I think they can add diversification. I think they can certainly add some juice in terms of returns to your portfolio. And if there's a particular space you're interested in, I think that's fantastic. I think you just have to look at the bigger picture here in terms of portfolio application.
Where it makes sense is when you have a high conviction. You know, you don't just peruse the list and say water, timber, and blockchain. You need to be highly convicted. And I think where these can help an investor is that if you're highly convicted in, I use timber, or whatever it is you want, you run into individual security risk if you're going to pick one company to fill that niche in your portfolio. So I think where these fit in is if you have high conviction and you want exposure to a concept or a theme, you know, pick three, pick 10, pick 15 companies. Well, that's where these fit in because that replicates that research process. So I think it makes sense there. But you're right. You know, you're not going to load up the truck with these things, or you have a strange portfolio and you're just simply duplicating, you know, your S&P 500 exposure.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Podcasts of ETF Prime are available at etfprime.com, etf.com, Apple iTunes, and we're also now on Spotify as well. Very excited about that. You can follow me on Twitter, at Nate Geraci. Next week, we'll be joined by Tim Urbanovich, Senior Fixed Income Product Strategist at Invesco. The focus will be bonds. We'll talk current bond market, interest rates, and we'll look at several Invesco ETFs, including the BulletShares Target Maturity Bond ETFs. Until then, have a great week, everyone.